All right, everybody. Hello again, and welcome to another Monday night and another episode of The Premiere with me, DJ Jazz. So we're continuing our October theme here, and we're going to be going over another horror movie. But this time on the show, we're actually going to be going over a couple horror movies because we are going to be talking about the Friday the 13th franchise. So if you've never heard of Friday the 13th, it's a lot. There are a lot of movies out now, and they've been going on since the early 1980s. So there's a bunch of different ones you could watch, but the original is still one of the best. And if you are going to be hardcore about it, you should watch them from start to finish. The first Friday the 13th all the way to the last one, which they've made, which came out in 2009, actually. So these movies have been going on from 1980 to about 2009. So Friday the 13th is an American what's known as slasher movie franchise. Slasher movies are just horror movies that mostly focus around the big death counts and all the gory details of all the kills in the movie. So there's a lot of those out there, but Friday the 13th is selective among them. It's been contains about 12 different films. It's got a TV show, novels about it, comic books, a video game, and several pieces of merchandise that are still available for sale. For the most part, the franchise itself is focused around Jason Voorhees, who is the main killer, the main enemy in all the movies. And Jason Voorhees, as a young boy, drowned at a lake, Camp Crystal Lake, where he was picked on as a kid because he had deformed features. And due to some negligent camp counselors, he fell into the lake and was drowned. Decades later, the camp is rumored to be cursed by his ghost or cursed by his spirit that still resides over the camp. So his story is really told like a campfire ghost story that you would get when you go camping. And so this sort of curse just stays over the town and stays over the camp, and no one really wants to go near the camp or the town. And it always becomes the scene of these mass murders, which is why the locals never really want to go near the camp in the first place. Jason is technically in all the films, and he's either the killer or he's the motivation behind why all these killings are taking place. So he is technically in all films, all 12. And as many movies as there are actually a lot of different actors who have played Jason. Several different actors have played Jason throughout the franchise. The original film was written by Victor Miller, and it was produced and directed by Sean S. Cunningham. And collectively, the films have grossed over $400 million at the worldwide box office. So all these movies have actually grossed almost $500 million at the box office. So we're going to be talking about the original Friday the 13th first, and then we'll be going down the line one at a time of each of the movies in chronological order, with the last one coming out in 2009. So the first Friday, the original Friday the 13th, came out in 1980. And the movie's beginning is about a new group of camp counselors who are looking to reopen Camp Crystal Lake. And while they're starting preparations, some of them will become missing and they feel like they're being stalked by someone. And slowly but surely, the counselors end up being killed off one by one. And you get this story about Jason and his drowning at the lake early on in the movie. So from early on in the movie, it's sort of assumed that Jason is the one that's going out and killing these counselors, and that's sort of the main reason behind it. Even the counselors, I think, at one point say that it's probably Jason, you know, just kind of scared. Near the end of the actual movie, you find out that it was not Jason, it was actually his mother, Pamela Voorhees. And so she's played by Betsy Palmer. Pamela Voorhees became determined to keep the camp closed after her son died while swimming. And so when she heard that they were reopening, she actually went on this killing spree of all the camp counselors. So she goes after the last counselor left by the name of Alice Hardy, and she's played by Adrienne King. And she's able to fend off Pamela for a while, and she runs and she grabs a machete, and she actually decapitates Pamela Voorhees' head. And she escapes. And then while she gets the idea to take a boat out into the lake to wait for police, so she's waiting for police out in this boat, and as she sees them drive up, this boy jumps out, deformed looking, supposed to be Jason,
jumps out of the water and grabs her from the boat. And, you know, it's a very shocking scene because everything is very quiet and they even have like some calming music like, oh, she made it. And then all of a sudden he just pops out of the water and grabs her. And he doesn't look like Jason. He isn't the big, you know, hockey mask faced Jason that everybody knows. He's kind of just this boy who's a little deformed and who's covered in dirt and grime. And so she wakes up in a hospital. So it goes directly from her being attacked on the boat to the hospital. And so she asks the police what happened to the boy in the lake, and they tell her that they didn't find anyone. So she has this realization that he's still there. She says that to the cops, kind of just under her breath. And the final shot of the original Friday the 13th shows the lake, and they zoom in on the lake, and you can actually see these ripples to start form in the middle of the lake. So it's kind of like a little subtle hint that something is coming out of the lake or something is sitting beneath the lake, which in all instances is going to be Jason. So Friday the 13th Part 2, which is the direct sequel, came out a year later, came out in 1981. And you find out early in the movie that Jason in this movie, this is the first time his character is actually on screen. And his character is played by two different people. It was an actor and a stuntman, by the names of Steve Daskowitz and Warrington Gillette. So they definitely had some unique names for the guy, first man to play Jason. And actually, the subsequent actors who played Jason all have some very interesting names, come to think of it. But in this movie, you discover that Jason is actually alive. He somehow survived drowning in the lake. And he's actually a grown adult, a fully grown. They never specify how old, but he is somewhat of an adult, probably in his late 20s, early 30s, I'm guessing. So his first act of the movie is he actually hunts down and kills Alice Hardy, who is the counselor who was the one who killed his mother. So once he does this, which happens at the very beginning of the movie, he decides to head back to Crystal Lake, and he guards it. That's basically how he's set up in most of the movies. Jason really resides in this Crystal Lake area and just keeps intruders out by killing them, unfortunately. But it's sort of just him guarding his territory and keeping intruders out as a final respect or a final payment to his mother, who died at the lake. So in the second movie, he actually doesn't have his hockey mask. When you see Jason, he's wearing this burlap sack that he's got over his head, just a brown bag, and he's got one eye hole for his left eye, and that's about it. So you don't really see anything of what he looks like, as usual. The reason for this, that you don't really see Jason's face in a lot of the movies, is because his face is really deformed. It was one of the reasons he got picked on a lot as a kid, is he looked very different. He looked really messed up. And so there's some movies where they've kind of hinted at the fact that he hides his face because he's still somewhat ashamed of it or sensitive about it. And there's some where he just kind of doesn't seem to care. There's some where his mask has been knocked off and nothing seems to have bothered him about it. But in this movie, he actually doesn't have the hockey mask yet. He's just wearing this burlap sack over his head, and he wears like denim suspenders. So he doesn't really look like the Jason that everybody really knows, despite the fact that it was his first time appearing on screen. So after about 5 years of hiding at the lake, this new group of counselors comes in so they can set up the camp. And to no surprise, Jason slowly begins taking them out one by one. And this is pretty consistent across all the movies, is there'll be a new group of people for one reason or another coming to the lake, despite all the different stories that have been told about the lake and all the different killings that have gone on there. A new group always shows up, and they're always slowly taken out one by one by Jason. The way he really does it is he'll wait for one. If you watch the movies, he'll wait for one to sort of go off on their own, or a pair to go off on their own, and then and get separated from the major from the main group, and then he'll single them out and take them out one by one until there's only about two, maybe three people left in the group. And then he just finishes them off. Although sometimes they get the upper hand and they kill him. So on Friday Part 2, Ginny Field, played by Amy Steele, is the last survivor, and she's running from Jason and actually stumbles upon a cabin that has this shrine built around Pamela Voorhees' severed head, which is actually partially decayed, and it looks really creepy in the movie. So she hears Jason coming, and she gets the idea to put on Pamela's sweater that she was wearing the night she was killed. It's in the cabin as part of the shrine. And when she puts it on, she starts talking to Jason as his mother, and he gets confused for a moment and believes that Jenny is actually his mother telling him these orders. So he gets distracted for a moment, and with his guard down, Jenny actually grabs Jason's machete and puts it right through his shoulder. She does a downward swipe and goes in from the top of his shoulder, and it ends up like around the middle of his chest. And so once that happens, they're actually able to, she's actually able to escape. So Friday the, and for the most part also, these movies, when the sequels do come out, they pick back up right where the previous one left off. In fact, sometimes the first scene of the next sequel will be somewhat around the last scene of the movie prior. So Friday the 13th Part 3, which came out in 1982, they come out, for the most part, the first couple sequels came out each year. They would come out 80, 81, 82, and they would come out each subsequent year. So Friday the Part 3 came out in 1982. Jason, who is now played by Richard Booker, actually removes the machete from his shoulder and ends up finding his way to this local little homestead that's owned by Chris Higgins, who's played by Dana Kimmel. And so Chris returns to the property with some friends who are, you know, just planning to hang out at for the weekend, and they begin being singled off and killed one by one every time they end up wandering too close to the barn where Jason is actually hiding to get away and heal. And so one of the people that they bring along is like this prankster kind of character, and throughout the movie he's, you know, got like fake blood, and he has he pops out at people and scares them. So he actually brings along a hockey mask, and he decides to try and scare some of the group, and he's confronted by Jason, who then kills him. And Jason actually decides to wear his hockey mask instead of the burlap sack. And so Friday the 13th Part 3 is the first time that we actually see Jason wearing the hockey mask that everyone knows him to wear. So it's interesting how such an iconic character doesn't actually come into his full costume until the third movie of the franchise, and the second outing that we've seen him on screen. The only time he was on screen in the first Friday the 13th was the last scene when he jumped up out and attacked the last counselor on the boat. But that wasn't really the Jason that we know from the slasher horror movies. So he didn't get that hockey mask until the third installment of Friday the 13th. And so at this point, he decides to leave the barn and start getting the rest of the group, since there's not that many left. And he confronts Chris, who actually has an axe, and she actually takes the axe and drives it straight into the top of Jason's head. But despite this, he actually continues towards her for a couple steps before he finally, you know, collapses to the ground. And she technically escapes, but the events of the night actually drive Chris into hysteria. And at the end of the movie, she's taken away in an ambulance, kind of laughing, like in a hysterical laughter, kind of like she's lost her sanity. So she does escape, but she kind of loses her sanity as a result. So the next Friday is titled Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter. And despite being titled The Final Chapter, and it came out in 1984, despite being titled The Final Chapter, there were several other movies that were made after this one. And we'll get to that later. But so it was kind of funny seeing now, like when you watch them on TV, and they show them around Halloween time, you know, back to back, you get the final chapter of Friday the 13th, and there's maybe four more chapters to the story. So it's interesting that they decided to title it that and then continue with the actual franchise. So it continues right around where Part 3 left off. Jason is played by Ted White now, and he has the axe removed from his body, and then he's taken to the morgue. And while he's at the morgue, he awakens and he kills two of the hospital staff before he eventually leaves and returns to Crystal Lake. So this time, there's actually a group of friends who are renting a cabin near Crystal Lake, and they become targeted by Jason on his rampage through this one. And when the group is around finished off, he looks to the neighbors of the cabin, who are a girl named Trish, played by Kimberly Beck, and Tommy Jarvis, who's played by, in this installment, by Corey Feldman. And Corey Feldman's been in, he's a child actor, he's been in The Goonies. So they end up being technically the last ones left, and Trish is able to distract Jason long enough for Tommy to surprise and kill him. But once again, the events of the night kind of leave Tommy in this weakened mental state. Like, he, when he's attacking Jason, he doesn't stop, and Trish actually has to physically pull him off. So once again, despite being the survivors of this attack and this mass murder, there's another victim who's left in just like a broken state because of what Jason has done. So we're going to take a quick break right now, and then we'll get back on to the next installment in Friday the 13th. This is Penguin Radio. You're listening to The Premiere, and I'm DJ Jazz. Welcome back to The Premiere. We were just talking about Friday the 13th and all the different movies that encompass the franchise. So next we're going to go on to Friday the 13th, A New Beginning, which came out in 1985. So Friday the 13th, A New Beginning actually follows a now adult Tommy Jarvis. If you remember, Tommy Jarvis was the child from the last movie who was able to kill Jason, but he ended up really in this weird mental state, and he was kind of lost his sanity. So, and now adult Tommy Jarvis, played by John Shepard, he's put in this institution after the events of the last movie, and he grows up in this constant fear that Jason's going to return and exact his revenge. So, in the movie, Jason actually appears to come back, and people begin getting killed, and the rampage eventually moves to this halfway house that Tommy's been staying at with a bunch of other orphans and reclamation projects, kind of like just like a place where people with nowhere to go can go and try to figure things out. And Tommy, a young boy named Reggie, who's played by Shavar Ross, and then their supervisor Pam, played by Melanie Kinneman, manage to get Jason in the barn, and then they shove him out the barn window onto this farming machine, and it impales and kills him. And when they go down, they actually find out that the body is not Jason, and it's found to be a local man by the name of Roy Burns. And Roy Burns is played by Dick Wieand. And at first they're shocked because they aren't really sure why anyone would become a copycat killer of Jason Voorhees. But when they dig into his past, they actually discover that Roy had a son who was at the same institution as Tommy, and he was murdered by one of the patients, and so it inspired him to take on this persona and begin killing the patients from this institution. So that movie actually never really features the real Jason. It features a copycat killer who dresses up as him with the hockey mask. And takes a mass murder spree on this little Crystal Lake area, but it's not actually the real Jason. So the next installment is Jason, Friday the 13th Part 6, Jason Lives, which came out in 1986. So Tommy Jarvis is the main character again, and Tommy Jarvis is played by Tom Matthews. And he's released from the mental health institution, and he decides to head straight for Jason's grave because he wants to destroy the body for good. He feels it'll give him this peace of mind if he sees the body and destroys it, like, completely. It'll help him put his mind at rest, because he still has these flashbacks and these hallucinations and visions of when he had to face Jason the first time as a young kid. So when he digs up and sees Jason's body, he gets filled with rage, and he takes a piece from the fencing surrounding the cemetery, and he stabs it through Jason's chest, and he leaves it for a minute to grab his materials, and the piece of metal is actually struck by lightning, and this inadvertently revives Jason, who's in this movie is played by C.J. Graham. And so he's able to get away from Jason, but Tommy attempts to warn the sheriff's department about Jason, but they know the fact that he's been released from this institution, so they just take it that he's crazy. So Jason ends up going back to Crystal Lake and continuing this murder spree, and Tommy ends up getting stuck in a jail cell by the local police. But with the help of the sheriff's daughter, Megan, who's played by Jennifer Cook, Tommy actually is able to make it to Crystal Lake, where there's a camp already set up there. In the previous movies, they had all tried to set up the camp, but were then stopped by Jason. In this movie, the camp has actually already been set up. So they're able to find the camp, the kids who are at the camp, and get them out. And the counselors, unfortunately, most of them get killed. The sheriff actually gets killed, which is unfortunate. At the end of the movie, Tommy ends up leading Jason out to the middle of Crystal Lake, and then he has a rock that he has a chain wrapped around, and he wraps it around Jason's neck and then sinks him to the bottom of Crystal Lake. And so at the end of the movie, you're not really sure if he's dead. You just know that he's actually just stuck there at the bottom of the lake. So the next installment came out actually 2 years later, and it was Friday the 13th, Part 7, The New Blood. And it came out in 1988. And it starts a small amount of time after the last movie. They never really say for sure. The main character is a girl by the name of Tina Shepherd, who is played by Lar Park Lincoln. And she has these, like, telekinetic abilities. She's able to move things with her mind, and she's able to control things almost with her mind. But she hasn't really figured out how to do it. It just happens when she's put under lots of emotional stress. So she goes... as a child, actually, her father drowned at the lake, at Crystal Lake, because she ran out after Tina had run out after she saw her father hitting her mother in an argument. And this is where she first realizes she has these abilities, because she ends up collapsing the dock and the father falls in the lake and drowns. So they end up going back to the family house on the lake to try and so she can see if there's anything there that will sort of help her control her abilities or show, like, where they might have come from. So she's at the actual dock where her father had fallen, and she gets the idea to try and focus on bringing him back. But she accidentally focuses her abilities on reviving Jason, who is eventually revived and comes out of the lake. And in this movie, Jason is played by Kane Hodder. And Kane Hodder is actually the actor who's played Jason the most across all the different films that have been made. He's the one who's stepped into the role the most. Most of the other actors have only played Jason once, and then they don't get called back for the next movie. So he is revived and begins this rampage again. And he attacks Tina's mother, who had come with her, and her doctor, who was studying her abilities, as well as a group of friends that was vacationing in the cabin that was basically right next door. And then in a final face-off, Tina actually resurrects her father, who jumps out of the lake and then reattaches the chain to Jason's neck and then traps him once again on the bottom of the lake. So Jason is stuck at the bottom of the lake when the next movie starts, which is Friday the 13th, Part 8, which is Jason Takes Manhattan. So this is which came out in 1989. And this is one of the first times that Jason has actually left the Camp Crystal Lake area and gone somewhere else. So this time, Jason's revived when a boat that's going through the lake, their anchor pulls an electrical cable that runs into his body and electrocutes him, and this is what brings him back. So after he kills the people on the boat, he ends up sort of drifting, and he wanders aboard another boat, which is bound for Manhattan, and it's full of students heading up for their senior trip to Manhattan. So during the boat ride, he actually kills several of the crew and the students, but the survivors, they eventually reach New York, and despite being in New York, which is a huge city, they still get pursued by Jason throughout the whole city, which I mean, it's a huge city. You figure you could lose him every now and again, but it seems like every time in the movie when they turn around, he's within 50 yards of him. So I don't know how that happens. I guess it's just one of those abilities that Jason has, which we'll talk about later, his various powers and abilities that Jason has. So the final two students, which are Rennie, played by Jensen Daggett, and Sean, played by Scott Reeves, are able to lead Jason into the sewer, which then becomes flooded with toxic waste, because there's toxic waste underneath New York City. So the sewer becomes flooded with toxic waste, and it basically melts away Jason. And so at the end of the movie, he seems to be destroyed. Yet, in 1993, Jason comes back for another movie titled Jason Goes to Hell: The Final Friday. So in this movie, through not really explained reasons, Jason is alive again, and he's operating around the Crystal Lake area. And he's chasing this person he thinks is just another victim, and is then led into an ambush that's actually set up by the FBI. And it's almost like a firing squad. They just encompass him in a circle and begin opening fire on him. And they actually throw explosives and grenades. And so after this ambush, Jason's left literally in pieces. His arms have been blown off, and his head's off his body. So he's literally in pieces. So while he's being examined in the morgue, the mortician actually looks at Jason's heart, which is still beating, and it's literally black. It's black, and it's got this black, weird, viscous fluid coming out of it. And Jason is actually able to make the guy bite a piece out of the heart. And once he does that, Jason is able to possess the mortician. And so this is another weird ability that Jason seems to have, where while his body is destroyed, he's able to possess other people through this sort of weird transference of his black heart. So with his body destroyed, he actually needs a new permanent body just as strong as his original one. And the only way he can do this is he has to find a person who has a blood relation to him and then possess that person. But the flip side to this is that only a person with a blood relation to Jason can actually kill him permanently. So there's sort of some danger to this setup already in terms of Jason and how he could end up. So the only living relatives that Jason has is revealed he has a half-sister by the name of Diana Kimball. Her daughter Jessica, and then Stephanie, which is the infant daughter of Jessica and her boyfriend Stephen Freeman. And so Stephen actually attempts to warn Diana, and they're both attacked by Jason, who ends up killing Diana and leaving Stephen as the prime suspect, and he's eventually jailed in the town, or put away in the town jail. But while he's in the jail, he ends up meeting a bounty hunter by the name of Creighton Duke, and he actually tells Steven Jason's plan and his weakness. He tells him about how he needs to be reborn, and even where Jessica and Steven's daughter are hiding. It seems like he's helping him out a lot, but Duke actually ends up using this so that he can use the family as bait for Jason later. So once he's got him as bait, Jessica meets Duke at the Voorhees family house, which is close by, and gives her this dagger that when she touches it, it grows and kind of shapeshifts. And he says that it's got these magical, mystical qualities to it, and that she has to use it on Jason. And so he shows up possessing this police officer, but the officer is killed quickly by Steven. He beheads him with a machete. Despite that, Jason's heart actually crawls out of the body and scurries away into the basement, where Diana, his half-sister's body, is sitting there. And Steven actually comes to this realization and asks Duke, does it need to be a living family member in order for him to come back? And Duke goes, I don't think so. And so at that point, Jason actually pops out of the basement looking like his old self with the hockey mask and everything. So he's actually reborn at full strength. So while Steven and him are fighting, Jessica is able to drive the dagger into Jason's chest. And when she does this, hands actually pop out of the ground and start to drag Jason down to hell. And so at the end of the movie, he's dragged down and his mask is left on the top of the dirt. And the last shot of the movie is actually Freddy Krueger's gloved hand coming out of the dirt and grabbing his mask and pulling it down. And if you're not don't know Freddy Krueger by name, Freddy Krueger is the horror icon from the Nightmare on Elm Street series. And he's the guy who's got the red and green striped sweater with the brown hat, and he's got the glove that's got knives on the end of it, and he's the one who kills people in their dreams. That's the Nightmare on Elm Street series. So some people know there was actually a Freddy vs. Jason movie that came out later. And so as far back as 1993, and I think Freddy vs. Jason came out in 2003, as far back as 1993, they were actually suggesting that they were going to do a crossover already. So we're going to take another quick break, and then we're going to get into Jason X, which is definitely the most interesting of all the Friday sequels. But right now, you're listening to Penguin Radio. This is the premiere, and I'm DJ Jazz.
Give them heaven on earth for a hell of a check, yeah, whichever comes first. Blessings on blessings on blessings. Look at my life, man, that's lessons on lessons on lessons. I treat the beat like it's a reverend. I tell the truth like, Father, forgive me. These are all my confessions, man. This wasn't luck, it was destined. I done lost homies who been with me since Ed, Ed, and Eddie, who flip like confetti. And then when you back, they back to call you dog. That shit can get petty. But don't get no dap to me now. Funny thing about talking behind my back is that it just keep coming back to me. It was off for a sec, now it's back to me. You mad at me, this ain't what I want, man, this what it had to be. This is that late night working after three, man. This is why my old girl was mad at me. This why I'm your majesty, man. The click is the tightest, the poop the tightest. The drinks are the coldest, the future the brightest. The feet not divided, the love is divided. And I just gotta thank God that we got it. Bless. I don't know what I would do without a crew. Look like we robbed a bank, but all we make is deposits. Your profit will profit, oh God. Oh God. I'm here for a good time, not a long time, you know. I haven't had a good time in a long time, you know. I'm way up, I feel blessed. Way up, I feel blessed.
Straight up.
I'm way up, I feel blessed.
Straight up.
Way up, I
look,
feel blessed.
I ain't gonna say that we back or nothing, cause that implies that we're back from something. If we're back from something, it's some checks you owe us. I expect that payment, nothing less or over. I don't need them favors that you asked me for. I could give two f- about where the Grammys go. I just gave out Grammys on my Instagram. Them OVO boys, the business, man. It is what it is. Trust me, you get what you get.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the premiere with DJ Jazz. We're going to continue our talk about Friday the 13th. And we're going to move on to the next title of Friday the 13th, which is Jason X, and which came out in 2001. So Jason X, I think, is definitely one of the most interesting installments of Friday the 13th, just because it takes place in the future. And it takes place in outer space, which is really not where you would imagine Jason ending up. So it starts in, despite the movie being made in 2001, the movie date starts in 2010. So it starts in 2010, where Jason is actually alive and being held in captivity at this military base underneath Crystal Lake. And they're studying his ability to regenerate and heal so quickly. And he's eventually breaks free and gets lured into this cryogenic stasis chamber by a scientist by the name of Rowan LaFontaine, who's played by Lexa Doig. But before he freezes, Jason stabs her through the chamber and actually releases this cryogenic fluid, which ends up freezing the both of them. So literally 400 years later, so the year in the movie is 2410, a group of students are exploring Earth as a salvage project, and they discover the pair and decide to bring them aboard their spaceship for study. So once he thaws out, he starts slowly killing everybody on the ship, including a group of soldiers which is stationed on the ship. And they're supposed to be, I think they're either Marines or something like that, but he ends up taking all of them out one by one as well. At a point in the movie, he actually seems to be killed. His arm is shot off, and one of his legs is shot off, and his head, I think, gets shot off. So he seems to be destroyed. But he breaks this healing table that uses nanotechnology, and it ends up bonding to him and actually turning him into this half-machine, half-human Jason. That's almost like a cyborg version of himself. So he ends up becoming even deadlier than he was before, and he actually looks even deadlier than he does before. His outfit kind of gets a makeover. His hockey mask turns like chrome and metal, and his eyes become bloodshot red. And he just Jason's a pretty intimidating dude to look at on his own, but once he gets this upgrade, he looks even worse. So the survivors are able to escape, and they eject Jason from the ship, where he actually lands on Earth 2, which is supposed to be an exact recreation of Earth, or a planet that's almost exactly like Earth. So at the end of the movie, it's just assumed that he's going to be killing people on Earth 2. So it's kind of a cliffhanger ending. And so the next movie to come out was Freddy vs. Jason, which came out in 2003. And it's a crossover with the Nightmare on Elm Street series, which has Freddy Krueger. And I had talked about him before. He kills people in their dreams, and he's got that glove with the knives on it. But as crazy as Freddy is, and as hardcore as some of the kills he has in his movie is, he is powerless if nobody remembers him, because he needs to be feared in order to be able to come back and sort of cause all this mischief in the first place. So Freddy, who's played by Robert Englund has actually played Freddy since the first Nightmare on Elm Street, and I think he's played it in every installment except the new one, which was sort of like the restylized, revamped version, where Freddy was played by Jackie Earle Haley, who's another good actor. But Freddy, who's played by Robert Englund, ends up resurrecting Jason, who in this movie is played by Ken Kersinger, from Crystal Lake. And by doing this, he invades Jason's mind, and he actually disguises himself as Jason's mother and tells him that he needs to go to Elm Street, which is the street that Freddy is known to kill the people who live on Elm Street. So he sends Jason to Elm Street, and he starts killing these people, and they immediately assume that it's Freddy. So people begin to start fearing Freddy again, and he becomes strong enough to kill on his own, but Jason won't stop his rampage. So it kind of leads to this final showdown between Freddy and Jason. And at one point, it appears Freddy's going to win. At one point, it appears Jason's going to win. The result is actually both end up being really banged up and injured. And they actually both end up being blown up and blown into Crystal Lake. So it seems as though they're both dead. But the last scene of the movie is actually Jason walking out of Crystal Lake. And he's got his machete in one hand, and he's got Freddy's severed head in the other. And it's just kind of sitting there. But when they zoom in on Freddy's head, he actually winks and then smiles at the camera. So it's the end of the movie is kind of like they're both alive and they're both operating. And then the next installment was titled Friday the 13th, and it came out in 2009. And so this film actually starts really early in Jason's story, and it sort of restarted the film series continuity. It's sort of like a remake of the original movie, or it's supposed to start as Jason doesn't have all this prior history to him. This is his original outing as Jason in this timeline. So after he sees his mother beheaded, that still stays the same. At a young age, Jason, who's played by Derek Mears, ends up growing up and following in her footsteps, and he kills anyone who enters too close to the lake. So a group of friends ends up going to the lake and to camp, and they're killed except one by the name of Whitney, who's played by Amanda Rigetti. And the reason she's spared is because she actually resembles Pamela Voorhees, Jason's mother, at a young age. And Jason has this locket that he wears with her picture. So he looks at the locket and he looks at her and sees the resemblance. And he kidnaps her, but he decides to keep her alive. Meanwhile, while this happens, some time goes by, and another group of friends arrives at a cabin on a different part of the lake, and they decide to go there just to hang out for the week as a vacation. And they're approached by this character, Clay Miller, who's played by Jared Padalecki. And he's actually Whitney's brother, and he's looking around the area for her. And so while he's looking, the people in this cabin end up getting attacked, and the last two survivors end up being Clay and Whitney. And Clay is actually about to be killed, and Whitney's able to confuse Jason, much like in Friday the 13th Part 2. She's able to act as his mother and sort of confuse him for a moment. And that small moment of confusion is enough to get Jason's guard down and then kill him. Whitney actually stabs Jason through the chest with his own machete. So once he's dead, they decide to dump his body into the lake, and they go to leave. And the last shot of the movie is Jason actually bursts up through the dock and grabs Whitney, and then the screen fades to black. So at the end of the movie, you're left to assume that Jason resurrects himself again and then goes after Whitney. So that's actually the last Friday movie in the series. So the last one came out in 2009, and the series has been going on for years. And I think all of them in their own right are very good, interesting. Some of them were a little cheesy. If you watch Jason X, it's almost like one of those really low budget sci-fi films like Sharknado. Not that bad, but it just reminds you of that just because it's really cheesy. And there's a lot of wacky one-liners, and it just doesn't really seem like a horror movie. It kind of seems like a horror comedy. So these are, over all these different movies, it's kind of interesting to, and you kind of wonder, you know, what has kept Jason alive or what keeps him driving and how strong really is Jason. So right now we're actually going to get into some stats about Jason Voorhees as the Camp Crystal Lake killer. So in most accounts over comic books and movies and novels, Jason is around 6'3", 250 pounds, and he's usually seen wearing his hockey mask, which covers his face. And over the 12 films, Jason's killed approximately 146 people, which is an average of about 12 different slaughters per film. And this number of 146 is actually more than either Michael Myers, who's the killer in the Halloween movies, and Freddy Krueger, which is the killer from the Nightmare on Elm Street series. So Jason is immortal to a degree. He's also undead. He's been resurrected numerous times in numerous different forms, so he's technically undead, but he's also immortal to a degree. He's been stopped before in each movie, but he keeps coming back. And even when his body was physically destroyed, he was able to possess others and eventually be reborn at full strength. Although he can only be reborn at full strength if he's able to possess a blood relative. So if his family ties are completely gone then and his body is destroyed, that would technically be a way to destroy him permanently. And so throughout the films, Jason's actually appeared in these various states of decomposing. Despite being immortal, his body has taken damage over the years, and it's also begun to rot. So in the earlier films, he actually looks mostly human. But as the series continues, his skin begins to turn white and pale, and some of it is actually green, and rotting, and you can actually see his skeleton through these hanging strips of flesh. And these hanging strips have already partially been eaten by, like, maggots. And he just, as the films go on, he just gets more and more battle damaged, basically. And some of the different attacks, he's been stabbed, he's been burnt, electrocuted, strangled, dismembered, numerous gunshot wounds of different calibers. He's had a boat propeller ground up to his face. He's definitely been through a lot. He just seems to keep coming back is the only thing. And most people know him for using his machete. That's his iconic weapon that he uses throughout all the movies. But he's been known to use a bunch of different weapons, basically whatever he just kind of has at his disposal to use. In one of the films, I forget which one specifically, but he actually, one of the first people he kills has this tool belt around him with all these different tools and doodads on it. And throughout the movie, he'll actually just take things off the tool belt and use them to kill people. So his machete is his iconic weapon of choice, but it's not the only thing he will use. And sometimes he just uses his brute strength. He's got this supernatural, inhuman strength about him. He's just super strong for already being as big as he is. And the source of this inhuman strength seems to have its roots in some sort of magic or otherworldly supernatural force. There were some claims in the movies that there's like a dormant mystical force at the bottom of Crystal Lake, and that was what originally kept Jason alive after he had drowned. And exactly how he survived drowning is still a mystery. They never really explained it in the movies. But it's assumed that his survival itself actually had a massive impact on his physical attributes. So the survival itself might have been enough to give him this sort of inhuman strength. There's other evidence actually from the movies, such as in Jason Goes to Hell, that Jason's powers came from some sort of demonic source. In that movie, when they're investigating the Voorhees family home, Steven actually comes across a book that's called the Necronomicon Ex Mortis, and it's the Book of the Dead. And it's been featured in some other another movie franchise, which deals in resurrecting the dead through this book and through demonic forces. So it's another, and that was also the same movie that they had Freddy Krueger. So it's sort of like they had these two different little crossovers in the same movie, which is fun to see. It's always nice to see when movies kind of tease that another movie has been there or that it connects with another movie series. You see that a lot now in like the Marvel series. They'll kind of dip their toes into each other's movies and mention each other's characters across the different movies when they come out, and the TV shows on Netflix as well. We're getting a little off topic. So this Book of the Dead has been used to resurrect the dead before, so it's assumed that one of the ways he might have been resurrected is through the use of the Necronomicon. Jason also has this ability to disappear and reappear from one place to the other, almost like he's a ghost or if he's like teleporting. And while this may just be coincidence, it would definitely be frightening if he had this sort of ability to just teleport when and where he pleased. So, and as well as this, he's actually really stealthy. Throughout most of the movie, as I mentioned before, he seems to single people out one by one and then take them out. And in order to do this, he actually has to sneak up on them or try and get them and try and isolate them. So he's really stealthy about the way he goes. For being as big as he is and for being as strong as he is, he doesn't really take the full frontal approach. He's almost always able to avoid detection until the last minute. And the reason that Jason survives so much damage is because while his body is strong and while his body is, you know, it's sort of the house for this demonic spirit, this vengeful spirit that is inside Jason. So while his body that you see in the movies is almost immortal, and as was seen in Jason Goes to Hell, he can inhabit other bodies, they're just not as strong, they're only really a housing agent for this dark spirit that's lying inside Jason, this angry, vengeful spirit. So that's one of the reasons why he's able to survive so much damage. So when the original Friday came out, it was produced and directed by Sean S. Cunningham, and he'd actually worked with Wes Craven on his horror movie The Last House on the Left, which came out in 1972. And Cunningham was really inspired by the success of the Halloween movie, John Carpenter's movie, which came out in 1978, and he wanted his own movie to be shocking and visually stunning, and he wanted it to make you jump out of your seat. And he wanted to distance himself from Last House on the Left. He wanted it Friday the 13th to be more of a roller coaster ride, whereas Last House on the Left was more of a suspense. It was kind of drawn out, and then there was a climax, whereas Friday the 13th, he wanted it to be up and down, and you were constantly wondering what was going to happen next. So the concept began as just the title, which was Friday the 13th. And the working title that Victor Miller, who was a writer on the script, had put was A Long Night at Camp Blood. And Camp Blood is what the townspeople actually call Camp Crystal Lake, just because of all the death that's happened there. But Cunningham really believed in the Friday the 13th title, so he rushed to place an ad in International Variety. And the original poster that they used was only the title, Friday the 13th, in large block letters, and it showed it rushing forward through this pane of glass. So it didn't really show anything else except that. So it was really vague, but it left people to wonder what the movie was about and drew in a lot more audience members. So following its success in 1980, Paramount Pictures planned to make a sequel immediately, and they acquired the distribution rights right then and there. And according to Paramount Pictures chairman and CEO Frank Mancuso at the time, he said, they wanted it to be an event where teenagers could flock to the theaters on the Friday night and they could see the latest episode of Friday the 13th. And the initial ideas for the sequels would be that they would be discontinuous stories and they would release one each year. So while these movies would all have somewhat the same title, Friday the 13th, part whatever, they would be different horror stories entirely. So it was like each one was its own separate horror story. And I actually, when I read that, I actually really enjoyed that concept. And it made me really hope that someone does that today. Because that would be awesome. If a film company just decided to release a different horror movie each year, yet it was titled the same, it's almost like if you've ever read the Goosebumps books, where it's these different horror stories, but they're all from the same company, or they're all from the same sort of world. So that would be a really interesting concept to be done. If anybody has some pull in Hollywood, maybe recommend that to someone. You might make some big bucks out of it. So Phil Scuderi, who was a co-owner of Esquire Theaters, insisted that the sequels have to have Jason Voorhees. He was the one that really pushed for it. And even though his appearance at the end of the original film was meant to be a hallucination or a joke, he really thought that adding in Jason's character would improve the series. So he was added in due to Phil Scuderi's input. And Steve Miner, who was an associate producer of the first film, really believed in the idea, and he ended up directing the first two sequels after Cunningham had opted not to return to direct. And then despite having just one film titled The Final Chapter, the public really demanded to see Jason. So even though they had the final chapter of the movie, they still had this huge demand to see Jason Voorhees on screen. And Mancuso had actually stated that, quite simply, the public still wanted to see these films. So until they really stopped coming, why not continue to make more? So until the audience really stops coming to the theaters to come and see Jason, there's no real reason for them to stop making these movies. They're only making profit off of them. So the Friday the 13th films are generally received negative reception from professional critics, as do most of these franchise slasher horror movies. Critics disliked how the series favored the high body counts over plot and character development, and how each film was indistinguishable from the last. Which, honestly, if you're a fan of slasher movies, or if you've seen a lot of slasher movies like Friday the 13th, The Nightmare on Elm Street, the Halloween movies, you kind of expect that going into it now. You expect going into these slasher movies that there's not going to be a lot of character development. The lines may not be that great, but you go to it just so that you can sort of see the killer go at it. You can see the guy on screen who's Michael Myers or Freddy Krueger or Jason Voorhees just go to work and take out all these counselors. And while that sounds really weird, that's one of the main reasons that people go to horror movies, is to sort of see these dark events take place but never have to see or never have to be part of them. I had mentioned this before when I was talking about The Shining. It's sort of this weird part of our human nature that we're fine to see these events take place as long as we know that they aren't actually happening and as long as we aren't directly involved with them. So these slasher movies kind of help, or not help, but they really emphasize this part of the human nature. Nevertheless, despite all these the negative criticism of the movies, the films actually had huge financial success, and it placed Friday the 13th as the highest grossing horror franchise in U.S. history, with approximately $687.1 million in money revenue from the movies. And several comic books were actually made that featured Jason on a rampage at Crystal Lake. As well, he's actually been shown facing off against other horror movie icons. There was a series of comics where Jason faced off against Freddy again, and as well as facing off against Freddy and another character from the Evil Dead series, which is where the Necronomicon, that Book of the Dead, is from. That character's name is Ash. So there's Freddy versus Jason versus Ash. There's actually two different series of comics of that. There was one where Jason actually ran into Leatherface, who's from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre series. And there's one where he ran into Jason X. So he ran into his cyborg self from that other movie. So there have been different comic books where he's been run, or he's run into and had to fight different powerhouses of these slasher films. And so it's kind of interesting to see that in comic books, even though you can't see it on screen. That is one of the cool things about comic books, is they're able to do these meetups and these awesome coincidences that you don't really get to see in movies just because it'd be too expensive. So the comic books are really interesting, and you can look them up online, just pictures of the panels and the story. And the story with him and Leatherface is really interesting. And the two different series of Freddy vs. Jason vs. Ash are really, really good, because it actually brings in some survivors from both the Friday the 13th series and the Nightmare on Elm Street series to help take them both out. So you'll actually see Tommy Jarvis, who was the boy who came from the mental institution. He's actually in the comic book fighting Jason at one point. So for the future of the Fridays, as of May 31st of 2016, producer Brad Fuller had told that there is a reboot in the works, but it's going to feature more of the relationship between Jason and his mother. So it's going to have a lot of the story take place before Jason even drowns, and it's sort of building this relationship that he has with his mother, who is the only person he really felt any sort of compassion towards, because she was the only one who really cared for him, due to the fact that he was so deformed in the face. Most people just picked on him. On August 8th, Variety actually reported that Breck Easner was set to direct the film. And Breck Easner has worked on The Crazies, which was another horror movie that came out in 2010. And it was about this town who had this strange virus, and it just made everyone go insane. And they eventually get quarantined by the government. Really good movie. And he also directed The Last Witch Hunter, which came out in 2015. And The Last Witch Hunter was with Vin Diesel. And it was, yeah, he's a witch hunter. And I think, the guy who played Frodo is in it. Elijah Wood. I think Elijah Wood is sort of like his apprentice or his partner and all that. So he directed those two, and he was rumored to be directing this future Friday that might come out. There's also a video game that's going to be released pretty soon that has Friday the 13th as its title. It's titled Friday the 13th, The Game. And it was started through BackerKit and Kickstarter, and it's actually raised a total of around $1,095,143.40 to make the game. And they gave a first look at the game at a game convention called PAX, P-A-X, South 2016. And they showed off the game mechanics and the abilities and the setting. And so the game is actually five or six people who play as camp counselors who are placed in Camp Crystal Lake. And when you're placed and you start the game, there's different landmarks like the cabin, the boathouse. There's just different landmarks across the map. And when you actually start the game, these landmarks will be put in random locations around the map. So these locations are going to be in a different spot every time you start the game. Every time you go into a new match, it's different. So you're going to have to learn the map really quick. So there's five different counselors, and depending on what your counselor is, you get different abilities. Like the jock is stronger and he can run faster, but he can't fix things. There's like a nerd character who can fix things really fast, but they're not as fast as running or strong. So depending on who you have, you have to know what to do. And the camper's objective is to try and escape Camp Crystal Lake, and they can do that in a few different ways. They can repair a boat, repair a car, repair the telephone lines to try and call for help. So there's a couple different ways you can try and escape. But depending on what you choose, not everyone may escape. The boat actually only has, I think, maybe two or three seats. So you can help fix the boat, but you have to be careful because you might not get a seat on it if there's six campers or camp counselors. And so while these people are doing that, there's one person who plays as Jason. And Jason is almost completely invulnerable and unbeatable during the game. They've stated that you can actually beat Jason, but it's the hardest thing to do in the game. It's the biggest achievement you can get is to actually kill Jason. So the one person who plays as Jason's only objective is to kill the campers before they can escape. And Jason has this ability to teleport, as I've talked about before. In the game, he actually has this ability to teleport across the map, but it has this cooldown to it, so you can use it once maybe every couple minutes. As well, he's also got his machete, and the environment that you're in is almost completely all interactive when it comes to killing these campers. So if you catch a camp counselor and you look around, there'll be like a rock, a door, a window, a tree, a car door, just anything. Anything that's around, you can bring them up to it, and if it gets highlighted in red, that means you can use it to kill the camper. So they have all these different animations on how you can kill these campers. And Kane Hodder, the guy who has actually played Jason the most, was brought in to do all the motion capture for the game, which was really cool. And it was really nice to see that he's still getting work just because of the whole franchise. This game is actually set to come out pretty soon. I believe they were going to release it at the end of October. I'm not sure if that's still their plan, just because they've been debugging and fixing the game and trying to make sure it's perfect. But it is coming out, and I actually do plan on getting it, and I might do a review of it once I play it a little bit and say how it is. But the concept itself does look really interesting. So I think that's going to wrap it up here for the premiere tonight. I want to thank you all for joining me again on Penguin Radio. On the premiere, I was DJ Jazz.